listeners, and welcome to another episode of Who Corner to Corner podcast. My name is Paul, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, Jeff.
That's me. Hello, everyone.
Hi, Jeff. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm good. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Fantastic. Yes, good. I'm very good. I'm in a really good mood today. Jeff, do you know why?
Well, I've got a good idea, but why don't you tell people?
Okay, so we are joined by one of our favourite TARDIS team members. We've already seen two-thirds of this particular TARDIS team. We've met Colin Baker, the Sixth Doctor. We've spoken to Miranda Raisin, who plays Mrs. Constant Clark. And I am delighted, ladies and gentlemen, to announce that we are now talking to the fabulous Lisa Greenwood, who plays Flip Jackson. Welcome to the podcast, Lisa.
Hello.
Thank you. Hi. Hi,
guys. How are you?
I'm good. Well, I've just had a fringe cut, and it's become a full-time job trying to make it work. So that is where I am at life right now, but I'll master it soon.
It's looking good, though. You've managed it well today, yeah.
That's
good.
Kind. I feel like you might be lying, but that's...
No,
believe me. Honestly, I haven't had my hair cut for about 8 weeks now. It's actually since before Christmas.
Yeah.
Hence the reason with the hat, because I take it off.
Yeah, if he takes that off, it's just going to be hair everywhere.
Yeah. It does, yeah. I've actually started wearing this now in my actual day job Zoom calls. And it's just part of the thing. So like, Paul, you're wearing a hat. Oh, yeah, I'll wear a hat. It's what I do now. You know, that's
I love a hat. I love a hat. I've been living in a hat, actually. Little caps. My friend Amy, she's actually in the Big Finish world as well, Amy Pemberton.
Oh, yes.
She's got this really beautiful hat, and she came around to see me a few months ago, and I wanted to copy her. So I went out and got the exact same hat, but she looks cool, and I look like a little person that works on a train. I don't know if I've got the hat down here. It's like a, you know, one of those big caps at the front.
She
looks so nice in it, and it just didn't work for me.
Oh no.
you got hat envy.
Yeah, I did. Massive hat envy.
Okay, so Lisa, you've been away from things for a while. You had COVID, which just kind of struck you from nowhere. How are you recovering from that? Are you kind of back in the game now?
It's been a very, very slow process. So I don't even know where to start. When I caught COVID, I collapsed, and I pretty much lost the ability to walk, stand. And it was very early in the pandemic, so people didn't really know what it was. And, you know, I was young, fit and healthy beforehand. So, you know, I got a lot of doctors tell me that maybe I had anxiety. But a year on, or 8 months on, we found out that I actually was suffering with blood clots and heart inflammation and stomach inflammation and all sorts of stuff. So from that point, it's been a process of trying to treat, manage, build strength. But it's been very, very difficult. But I am one of the lucky ones. You know, I didn't perish. Touch wood. It's, you know, it's been a process. The hardest thing is a complete change of lifestyle at the moment.
Yeah.
And also working through those memories as well of not being able to walk and talk and being bed bound. It was horrific. Really hard time.
Yeah.
I'm getting there. I'm trying to stay as positive as I can. And I'm seeing friends a lot more now.
Brilliant.
My agent's eager to send me auditions.
Oh, that's
you know, I've not got the ring light out yet. So I don't know. I feel a little bit reluctant at the moment. But yeah, time will tell. It's a weird thing. I've never had this much time away from acting. So when I got my first script back, I was just a bit like, oh my God, I don't know if I one know how to do this anymore.
What am I supposed to do with this bit of paper? What, you know?
Exactly. And it was very strange experience as well, because a lot of things are self-taped now. Because I missed the whole pandemic thing, didn't I? Because I was unwell during it. And the acting has now gone to the self-tape world. It was like, what? I have to set everything up myself and have to record myself. Like, what? These are skills I've not learned.
We've spoken to a lot of people who set up little recording studios in their broom cupboards, in their airing cupboards, in the bottom of their wardrobes.
I go back to Amy as well. Amy said to me, she needs to help me with a setup, because I'm currently resting you on a candle. But I know a lot of people have proper setups and mics and things like that.
So
I will get back to it.
Sound rules in.
duvets hanging up in their cupboards and stuff, isn't it?
Yes,
oh, yeah, it's
slightly soundproofed, you know. Yeah,
you're leaning on a vase, resting on a candle next to a cup of coffee.
Well, that's a pretty good setup to be in, really. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
It is. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, wish you the best of health and everything, and you know, getting through that, it must have been something. But just want to let you know as well, since we told people that you were joining us on the podcast, we've had a lot of fans and followers kind of you know, ask us to put forward their well wishes for you, and you know, sort of wish you the best of health, and so glad that you're back in the world of Doctor Who, and ready to continue playing Flip Jackson, because it was kind of left on a bit of a cliffhanger, wasn't it?
I mean, I just want to say I have seen a lot of the messages, and I do try to respond where I can, but I think where the last couple of years I've been googling a lot of, you know, how do I get better from blood clots and how do I do this? My algorithm is very medical at the moment on social media. So I do also find it very triggering going on there. But tons of lovely messages, people that I've met at conventions, from across the pond, sending me emails and stuff. And it's really kind, like whenever I feel like I need a little lift, I'll go on and I'll be like, what's everyone doing? Doctor Who wise, you know, it feels good.
It's been really nice. You know, people were, you know, concerned and you know, for you, and you know, when, like Paul said, when we said we were chatting with you, you know, they wanted to pass on their best, and they were pleased to see that you were sort of getting active again and you know, feeling better in yourself. So it's really nice. You know, it's a good community, and you know, people obviously you know, they like you and they care. So I thought that was really nice to see.
It's an amazing community, and I would say I'm not out of the woods yet. But I'm hopefully getting there. You know, long COVID is very, very misunderstood at the moment. And the clotting issues are something people are struggling with to try and treat. But I feel like a lot of things are getting better. But one of the things I need to really improve on is my energy. My energy can sometimes feel a bit weak. And that's one reason why, you know, there has been talks about me coming back to play Flip. But I want to come back when I can give the full energy I can give to that character, you know, because she is a very big character. And she gets a lot of lines.
You
know, I don't get a break in that studio, guys. They work really hard. So I need to make sure that I have the energy, because I feel like I do a bad job, you know. And I know that everyone at home won't see that. And they won't feel that.
But you feel it.
But you know in yourself.
That's the perfectionism in me. And that's something that I really have had to try and work on, especially over getting ill, because I can't do things at the level that I'd want to do them. Right. So I need to check that perfectionism. Because in acting as well, it can be quite detrimental to your performance and your mental health. You know, if you feel like you never have done a good job, or you wish you could have done things better. But really, no one else sees that. It's just the
that's one of the things when you do something creative, isn't it? You know, you put yourself at this self expectation, and you know, probably you're always hitting it, you know, and for the audience, and they'd be happy and they think it's all great and everything. But if you kind of go away thinking, you know what, I could have done better there, it sort of nags at you a little bit, doesn't it?
100%. And I feel like it's probably not only creative industries. I can't be alone. I think it's a lot of people may feel like that, and it might be down to social media. You know, you see everyone having the best life ever and succeeding in their work and booking 75 acting jobs, you know. There might be other people as well. It might not be just me. I don't know. What do you think?
What you need to do is retrain your brain. So when you're looking at something, a piece of work that you've done or stuff you're doing during the day, and you're focusing on the negatives more than the positive stuff, you need to kind of flip it round, so to speak. Indeed. So you train yourself to look at the positive stuff. And whereas sometimes that can feel uncomfortable, because it's like, you know, well, I'm blowing my own trumpet because I'm looking at this and I think I'm great here and I'm great there. Actually, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, it's building self-esteem. It's building, you know, the value of the work you've done in your own my mind. And they're still going to, you know, those negative things are still going to be there. But because you're focusing on the positive stuff, that now reinforces your self-belief and your it builds your self-esteem and gives you the energy to move forward. That's the theory. It does
work. It's funny you mentioned that, because especially with what I've gone through the last couple of years, I've had to pick myself up constantly. You know, I have to, there were one point that I couldn't stand in the shower, but I had to keep trying to get there, you know?
Yeah.
And I started looking into something called brain retraining and the effect it has on something called the amygdala and the nervous system and how you can rewire the brain. Not always in medical issues, obviously, because medical issues are medical issues, but thought patterns.
Yeah, exactly that.
So,
yeah.
So if you go down a negative thought pattern, like, oh, you know, I'm worried about doing this job, I'm not good enough for this job.
Yeah.
You have to try and stop it in its tracks.
You do. Yeah, it's self-defeating. And if that becomes the habit, it's going to be more difficult to break out of it. Yeah. So it's learning the new habit and reinforcing each time. And it does feel strange initially, but when it becomes the habit, it's your day-to-day, and you know it can make you, you know, it's not just the physical things. It's like you would physically retrain your body to do something, you know what I mean, like
it's the brain as well.
Exactly. It's not that different in that way.
And that is a plus actually that I'm taking from all of this, is that's happened, because I was in a pattern with a lot of things in life. And what is it, high functioning, I don't know if I had high functioning anxiety. Right. So I never realized that I had it, but I was always on the go. And having to stop has made me realize that that pattern that I was in wasn't particularly healthy. So if anything good comes out of what's happened over the last couple of years, I'll take that, you know, and hopefully it can lead me on a better path.
It will lead you on a better path.
I hope so. I feel like a different person completely.
Oh, brilliant.
That's good. Yeah. And you, you know, despite the difficulties and what's happened, you know, you clearly positive, and you know, you've learned from it. And
I try. I have my moments. I don't want anyone to watch this and think, "Oh my God, look at her!" Like, I'm not like as good as that in the sense. So I'm going to be honest. I have my moments. You know, I am upset some days. Some days it all just gets to me that I'm still not at the level that I want to be. And I think it's important to talk about that as well. Because, you know, life's not all good all the time. You do have these harder moments as well. And this is the first time in life I've really had to have hard moments, you know. So I thought, you know, I'll share them.
I think it's good. You know, I've been following you on Twitter and your updates from time to time, and you know, what you've been going through and things. And, you know, I think anything like this, or, you know, any kind of, you know, taboo subject, you know what I mean? This isn't necessarily taboo, but, you know, hopefully you know what I mean. But it's good to talk about it. It's a difficult subject, because there's going to be other people out there who've gone through the same thing, or, you know, might be able to take the some inspiration from the way you've dealt with it and apply that to what they're going through. You know, so
Exactly. And as well with long COVID, it affected everyone differently. So someone might have a cold with it. And me, I had heart inflammation, stomach inflammation, blood clots, and couldn't get out of bed for the best part of the year, you know? But I think it's good to break down those subjects to make people more aware of what can happen. And like I said, hopefully I'm going to keep striving to go upwards. I'm a long way from where I was, but yeah, I think it's important to talk about.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how differently it affected everyone? You know, that's like when I got it. So like one of my twin girls, she was 3 and a half and she got it, absolutely wiped out. And then I got it at the same time. And I sort of, you know, had to keep blowing my nose and stuff. But then in the afternoons, I'd be absolutely exhausted. And I was like, this is ridiculous. I'm just sitting here with Ella watching TV, but I want to go to sleep. Like, I really need to do it.
You're fighting it.
Yeah. And then when my wife got it, you know, I said, I don't understand. You don't seem to have any symptoms. She said, my legs are tingly. And that was what she had.
That was it.
Yeah. No blowing the nose, no cough, nothing. And then, you know, I've, you know, met other people who've had it, and, you know, they've had bad headaches, or they've been in bed for a week and stuff like that. It's so strange how everyone has you know, these different
affected
things.
Differently.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a million-dollar question. I hope. I mean, you didn't ask a question there. I don't. That was my question in my head. So this is something I do as well.
Invent questions.
Invent questions. I've forgot the question. Never mind. Carry on. So I was going to say, sorry guys. I was just going to say, if we can figure out a way to treat it.
Yeah.
But it's like you say, it's difficult because it affects everyone differently. Mm-hmm. So it's. That is the $1 million question.
Yeah, that's true. And it's like they've been saying, we have to kind of live with it now, don't we? I mean, great, we've now got some vaccines for it, and we got the program and everything else, which is good. But it's just another thing that's gonna affect us in our daily life. You know, from on a scale that ranges from almost zero to like a million, and it's where in that scale are you going to be? You just don't know until. Yeah. Until it hits. But shall we talk about Doctor Who? Move on to a happier subject. So
of course.
Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
No, thank you for letting me share that. It can be a difficult subject that not everyone wants to hear about or talk about. So thanks for giving me the time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You're welcome. So we've got a whole bunch of questions from our followers and our listeners
and our own brains as well.
And our own brains. Yeah. Well, more Jeff's brain.
You decide which are the best questions.
I added a question to it. Jeff sent it to me. I went, oh yeah, I'll stick one in there. And I didn't actually tell you which one that was, but I've had it written down in my pink pen on my question sheet. So if it comes up, I shall ask it. Right. Okay. Let's go then.
All right. So let's kick this off, Lisa. Tell us, for anyone listening who doesn't know, tell us who Flip Jackson is.
So Flip Jackson is the Sixth Doctor's companion, and the Sixth Doctor, of course, is played by Colin Baker.
Wonderful.
And I've played her, oh my gosh, I actually can't remember how many years now, but it's been, I believe, over a decade.
Yeah, it's been quite a while, hasn't it?
Yeah. Wow. Like, I remember being very fresh-faced and... You know, I got my first granny the other day, so I'm just that's how it's been.
Yeah, it's another reason I wear the hat.
It's been a very, very long time, and Colin's the only one I've ever worked with. He's the only doctor I've ever worked with.
Yeah,
but that's Flip. She's a East End girl, a bit like me, and the first time we ever met her was she was working behind a cheese counter.
I can relate to that.
Really fun. That
supermarket.
Nice. I worked in Debenhams many moons ago.
anyone listening, when there was a Debenhams. Debenhams was showing a department store.
So Flip began life behind a cheese counter, then weighing out cheese and bits of Wensleydale and cheddar and everything else. Yeah.
I wasn't the assistant, first of all. It was
a one-off, wasn't it, initially?
It was.
Was Flip engaged at that point in the storyline, or was it today?
Oh my gosh,
later?
You're testing
from a decade ago now.
all I know is she's not engaged anymore.
Yes,
Did she get married? Oh my god, it all blends into one.
She did have her. There was the wedding, and she was at the reception, and then the
she brought off, didn't she?
Yeah, the portal thing appeared, and it took her back to the
alien stuff happened
40s, where she was reunited with the Doctor and Mrs. Clark. Yeah, I can't remember where it went after that. Forgive me, I don't think she ended up, you know, properly getting married.
Actually, getting
she was
married.
On the wrong.
Yeah.
My first. Big Finish job I ever did was one of my first acting jobs.
Was it really?
I'd never done really anything before. I did a government drugs campaign, which was weird. I did that one job where I was like, take the drugs. I don't know why I was
take the drugs.
Inverse messaging.
I thought it was going to be one of those say no to drugs. Yeah. No,
say no.
Take the drugs.
Person, and I thought, I don't know what made people look like I could be that person, and there was the good person and the bad person. Yeah. And I was like, take the drugs, and the other person was like, don't take the drugs.
I got it.
Yeah, and then obviously they went down the good path, which was
the right way. Yeah.
Yes, and then I got the call to go down to Big Finish, and I was really nervous. And the script came, and obviously because it's audio, it was the biggest thing I'd ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
But I didn't want to ask my agent if I just had to read my part or learn the whole thing. So me being a perfectionist.
Read all of it.
I read all of it. Yep. I learned everyone's lines, the doctors.
Oh my goodness.
Everyone.
Wow.
I know. Yeah.
That's dedication.
Yeah.
I mean, a bit too much, if I'm going to say that. It was great. It was great fun. We went down there. I was in booth 6. I remember being very nervous. Yeah. And there's a little hole in booth 6. And I could just about see.
Well, where they serve you food through, is that all?
the legendary Big game. Finish lunch.
Yeah. You get a little bit of their lunch first. Yeah.
Under the door.
They lock you in.
Yeah.
To my left, I saw. To my left, I saw Maggie. And then to my right, I saw Colin.
Yeah, Maggie Stables.
And it was only a few lines. It was only a few lines. Maggie was lovely. Yeah. Really, really kind and soft. And it was my first introduction to Big Finish.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then it led to more after that. So when we spoke to Miranda, she said that it's quite sort of theatre in a way with their kind of cast. And if they like someone, and they've done a smallish part, they'll often bring them back for more, because that's what happened with her, a bit like you. As you probably know, she did a couple of other stories and then was asked to, become Mrs. Clark.
Yeah.
So, how did it go when they, gave you the call to say they wanted you to come back? How did that all happen?
I was very excited. It was obviously at the start of my acting journey. Like, I hadn't really done a lot of things, and they asked me to come back and be a regular. And I just thought, this is great. This is really, really great. And I slowly learned that you don't have to obviously memorize the whole script. Which made life a lot easier for me.
Yeah.
But I got put into booth 1, and to the left of me was Colin.
Yeah.
And to the right of me was the production team, the directors. So it became more of a collaborative approach. I could act off Colin, get the notes from the directors, and that was the difference, I think.
And what a lovely thing for you as an actress to, have done that kind of small role and have impressed them that much that, they asked you to come back and be a regular. It's the kind of thing like, any actor, wants, isn't it, to get a recurring role, or like, for me as a
regular income, Jeff.
Yeah, to be, as a videographer.
That's
to get,
what we all need.
repeat jobs and stuff, So, yes, I think that's fantastic that, they asked you back like that.
Definitely.
It was really surreal as well. I remember they invited me to one of the first ever conventions. I didn't even know what convention was, right? I didn't know anything really. I'd watched a little bit of Doctor Who, but only David Tennant's season.
Yeah.
So I'd never seen anything really before that.
Right.
And I remember I was waiting behind the doors. I had no idea what was going on. And it might have been Jason, Hey Gallery.
Okay.
And she said something like, "Welcome, Lisa Greenwood." And I opened the door, and there was like loads of people there, and they started clapping, and I had to walk down the centre of this aisle. What is happening?
Was it quite nervous then? Did you expect that?
I don't think I had time to be nervous. I was just mega confused. Probably a bit of a deer in headlights moment. Just like, what? Like, I didn't realise I was going to be on stage having a chat with everyone, and... I thought I was there just a wave,
It's brought me to wave,
a wave in the background, but no, it was a shock to the system.
Oh, wow.
So when you started, playing Flip, like you said, hadn't really watched much Who, so did that make it easier in some ways for you to not have a sort of, imagine if Paul or I went in to do it. Like, I think that's Paul's dream to do Big Finish with his voice range. But to go in and, oh my God, it's the Sixth Doctor, you'd be quite nervous. So did you not have that,
I didn't. I didn't have any nerves. But I've never really been nervous around actors and things like that. Interestingly, the only person I've ever got nervous around was... And I've forgotten her name. What the hell? She's my favourite actresses from only. We'll come back to it.
Okay.
Ab Fab.
Jennifer Saunders.
She's my favourite person in the whole world. She's the only person I ever got a bit starstruck around. But it was good not having all that background knowledge and how huge the show was, because I think it could have got in my head at the time. So I just felt very free with it. It was very exciting. The scripts were brilliantly written. So you see them in your head, you know what I mean? So you don't have to worry about even acting. Because it's all in the voice. And yeah, I didn't feel very nervous at all, really.
Oh, that's good. And how was it or how is it working with Colin? When we chatted to him on the podcast, he was absolutely brilliant.
He
did the show intro for us because, Paul, you stumbled slightly, didn't you?
See, when you're talking about nerves there, I was thinking about Colin when we had him on the podcast. And I think that was the first time I really, really felt nervous because I'm talking to the doctor. A doctor that I kind of grew up with way back because I'm that old, right?
So, he really is.
And it's a weird thing where sometimes the fictional persona can become so huge and so massive that it kind of does overshadow something. And I hadn't expected it actually, I stumble my words anyway, but I hadn't expected to feel quite so nervous. And then Colin put me straight at ease by saying, I hate nervous people.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, thanks, Colin.
he was just brilliant.
And
we talked for longer than we kind of thought we would. We had a really good time. So,
he's a talker.
He's a talker.
You get some good conversations out of Colin,
which is great for a podcast. That's what we don't want is a non-talker. So how are you getting on there with your latest project? That's all right.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
We've never had
you know when Colin's arrived, you hear him before you see him.
I can imagine. He's got, well, actually, kind of like all the doctors, really. He's got quite an identifiable voice, isn't he? You know.
It's a brilliant.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
It's a brilliant voice for radio. So, it just fills the room. Mm,
yeah.
Banging
as well. Big, it's a
little bit gravelly as well. You know, it's got a nice tone to it.
Mm.
So since you got the role of Flip, have you watched much Doctor Who? You know, did you kind of catch
I
up
went
with
through
the
stage.
You know?
Mm. Yeah, definitely. So obviously when I got the role, I was watching it quite religiously. And then I've stopped way back, to be honest, that I think you're going to be shocked, but the last season that I may have watched was Peter Capaldi. So we're a few episodes in now. I've got a reason for the last 2 years. I've not really been watching anything.
We'll let you off there. Yeah.
Apart from things that I've watched before, which is really, really weird, but I read somewhere that it brings up your dopamine levels.
Oh yes, yeah.
I just read an article, so I'm like religiously watching Buffy.
Yeah.
Going around pretending I'm some sort of vampire slayer. Peter Capaldi. And then I've jumped in and out, you know.
I've watched an episode here.
But this is the best time for me to catch up now.
Have you
gone back and watched any of Colin's stories on TV? Have you watched those yet?
I've seen a lot of it on YouTube.
Yeah.
He's brilliant. It's a completely different era, isn't it?
And
whenever Colin's in something new as well, I'll always watch that. So I saw him in Doctors.
Oh, yes.
I watched him on Pointless when it came out.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see that actually. I would have loved to see that. Yeah.
He did towards the end of last year. He did a theatre tour for like
Sherlock Holmes.
A radio play version of Hound of the Baskervilles. So we got invited, didn't we, Paul? You couldn't make it to any of the shows that were near you.
You keep bringing that up, Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah, so I went, Paul didn't, and unfortunately I didn't get to go and see him or anything, but it was great. It was kind of like Big Finish live in a way, really. You know, they had someone making sound effects and they all got up and did their bits on the mic and stuff, so it was really good. Yeah, it was good.
No, I couldn't have asked for a better person to be paired with.
That's great.
I was very new into it and he's very experienced in that world, so to have and be under someone's wing like Colin, I think was a great opportunity for me.
So like we said earlier, things with Flip were sort of left in a bit of a cliffhanger, weren't they, kind of off screen, off air. So do you know if there's plans for you to that's what the other big question is, when might you come back, and you know, do you know what's going on? And
I mean, like I said, I've had a few messages from the team saying you have to come back and do a bit, you know, would you like to come into the studio, and it just has to be at a point where I feel like I'm ready to be on my feet and give that much energy. But as well, we can do a setup at home. That's a great thing about audio. Yeah. So we can make it work. Mm. And I know they're probably itching to get a script out, and I am as well. So
yeah
watch this space.
Yeah, great. I love the the genuinely you three are my favorite kind of Big Finish team, and I love the the relationship you have with Constance, you know, the way Flip calls her Connie, and she's like,
it's a nice counterpoint, isn't it?
Yeah.
That kind of 1940s, slightly middle to upper class kind of received pronunciation, very proper in her valleys. I mean, she's a great heroine, but she's also she maintains her status.
Yes, well, Mrs. Clark the whole time, but she obviously likes Flip.
And Flip's like, I don't care about any of that.
Exactly,
bang, 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 straight at it. Yeah. Don't know. Straight through.
I know. Yeah. She's a bit full on. Like, imagine what it's like being Flip's friend. You know,
I couldn't keep up.
I feel like you'd need good health insurance being Flip's friend. Like, you'd get into some really tricky situation.
I could imagine her, Saturday night out would involve, climbing walls and, doing, crazy stuff.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of crazy stuff. I must admit, actually, because I've only recently, I've been sort of in and out of Big Finish for many years since they started. But I kind of lost the way a little bit with the sort of month with all the releases that were coming through. And Jeff actually got me back into the Colin Baker range, and specifically the stories with you and Miranda Raisin as well. And I must say, they are very, very good.
Yeah, they are really
It's astonishingly good. So what I want to do now is actually go back to the start of Flip Store, because I've listened to them piecemeal. So I don't know if they particularly follow on one from the other, if there's like an ongoing story.
Yeah, but there's not so much an ongoing story, but there is
the characters kind of dip in.
Yeah, the characters have kind of arcs, don't they?
We have a plane going across. I don't know if you can hear that.
We can't hear that. We've never known it was there unless now that you mentioned it, we're listening for it.
Oh, no, it sounds like the loudest plane ever.
That's right, actually. I get military planes over here. They could be really bad. So hang on to everything. Whoa!
So
no, we have been very blessed with the writers. Obviously Johnny has done a lot for us, he created Flip. I always enjoy Chris Chapman, Matt Fitton. Like, I don't want to miss anyone out, to be honest. but there's a few great writers.
They've got a good pool of talent there.
Yeah, they really do. So I've got a couple of questions here from one from Twitter and one from Gallifrey Base, which is a big Doctor Who forum that you might have heard of. So at @vinyl_librarian on Twitter asks, what other Doctor would you love to have Flip play opposite?
Ooh. Oh
my gosh, that's a tough one. Because I've actually met a few of them and had some really great memories with a lot of them. It's a tough question. One who I think is great is Sylvester McCoy.
Love Sylvester.
Just because I love him as a person, right? I think he's a really fun person. I can tell you a funny story, actually, how I kind of first met Sylvester.
Please,
We was doing a convention abroad somewhere, and there was like a typical American bar, right? And so I ended up walking into the bar and I saw Sylvester up there on the bar. And I was like, hey, you're right. And he was like, yeah, sit down. Let's have a drink. So I was like, okay. Yeah. Bearing in mind, I'm not a big drinker. I drink, with a posh steak, I have a lemonade. Like, I'm not a red wine type of girl.
And
he gets me a whiskey, right? And I've never drunk whiskey in my life, right? But I'm trying to play it cool.
Quite strong, yeah.
I'd say this is my strong.
I'm trying to play it cool. Because he's Scottish. I'm half Scottish. I'm like, if you can do it, I can do it. I've got it in me to drink whiskey. Anyway, it burnt my nose hairs, my esophagus. It felt like it burnt my entire stomach. And I couldn't finish it off. And then, he picked it up and finished it off.
Off it goes,
And after that, we were friends the whole convention.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh my god, I've got another story as well.
Please,
do you want to hear
share.
It? So we went to the House of Blues, which is a fancy restaurant in America where they play like really blues music and jazz. And
oh, sweet, yeah.
Yeah, and before I knew it, I turned round and Sylvester was on stage, right?
Just randomly on stage. He's there.
He
there's a stage. I'm going for it.
Exactly.
Brilliant.
And he was up there with like the saxophone player and the singer. And he was swinging his walking cane around his head.
Was he? Oh, my goodness.
It's always a fun night out with Sylvester.
Yeah, so, I can imagine. Brilliant.
Yeah, I feel like he's the doctor I think that I'd want to team up with because I think we'd have a good time.
Yeah, that would
be good. He's very physical, isn't he? Or, you know, as much as he can be nowadays. But it's that's what he used to do, was lots and lots of physical comedy or torture, I think, as most of us would call it, driving 6-inch nails up his nose and
I went to I went to one of the conventions in London last year in February, I think it was, and Sylvester was there and he did a talk as well, and it was so funny. He obviously, the guy asking the questions wasn't kind of stimulating it enough, so Sylv just kind of was like,
it took ownership, did
he? Yeah, he just basically stood up and started picking out people from the audience of questions and just kind of leading it, and the guy sat there and went, it was just really funny the way he took charge of it like that. But I think flipping the Seventh Doctor, that would be really good. I think they'd have some good banter together, and
I feel like it'd be a bit of an explosion. And the other one maybe I'd like to work again would be Peter Capaldi.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah.
I've worked with him in the past and I just thought he was an incredible actor. It was on a show many moons ago called The Hour, and he gave me some amazing acting tips that I've never really forgotten. And he also had this incredible talent of rocking up to set and learning his lines on the day.
Really?
Now, I don't know how you do that.
No.
But he'd take the lines, he'd learn them, and it'd be the best performance ever. He's so talented, he's so composed, and it was just before he got Doctor Who, actually.
Together.
Oh wow!
Yeah, we're waiting for him to join Big Finish. He hasn't done it yet.
Hey, he's got to come on our podcast first, mate.
have to drop his agent an email. So I've got a question from Cicero123 on Gallifrey Base, who says, "What's been your favourite story that you've done for Big Finish?"
There's a question.
I feel like it's always the same one, but I really, really enjoyed it, and it was called The Middle.
Yeah.
I think it was by Chris Chapman, but I'd have to go back and double check.
Mm.
And it was just this idea of that the young live on this planet called Formica, and they have fun and they do whatever they want and they have no responsibility. But when they get old, they get shoved off to work and to die. It was a really weird storyline, but it was the one that I thought could transition over to TV.
Right.
So I just imagined that, really. And it was a really fun one to play. It was me, Colin, and Constance.
Yeah.
It was really good fun, that one.
Brilliant. Paul, have you got any more Doctor Who related questions?
I do, sorry. Okay. I was just checking who did write that. It was Chris Chapman. You're quite right. Over on my other screen. So what sort of preparation do you do, any sort of preparation processes for getting into the zone of Flip, for changing from Lisa to Flip?
With your line learning as well, because you said you learned that first script, and then after you recorded, and then when you went back, did you take a different approach to the scripts?
Definitely. So what I would normally do now is I read through the whole script. Any scene that I'm not in, I would take out and put to the side. I'd still take it with me, but I only have my scenes. And then obviously I'd highlight my lines and read them through and perform them at home like I would in the booth. And I'd leave side notes on the side. So if we're ramping up to a comedy moment for Flip, I need to know that we're going to get there. So I need to try and find a way to make it funny.
Step into that, grades. Yeah?
So I do that. And also, if there's any lines that I don't think Flip would say, I just gently express that to the writer and say, I don't know if that's something Flip would say. You know? I think there was one that was like, "Cool, blimey, governor," and I was like, "We're pushing it."
Yeah, that's a little bit. Bit far there, yeah.
So somebody else's idea of what a cockney is,
isn't it? Yeah.
The funny thing is I am cockney, right? So I grew up in that area, and this is so funny. I remember getting a comment, and someone was like, that Mockney accent, as in a fake Cockney accent. And I was like, actually. That was my accent back in the day. It has softened so much.
Yeah.
But I say that, you probably don't think it has, but
no,
it's still there. Straight. Yeah. Imagine what I was like 10 years ago. It was very, very strong. So I tried to get back to that and try not to soften my words or, you know, use very big words.
Yeah.
I love flip, but I try to bring it down a little bit.
Yeah, that's nice.
The accent stronger.
Yeah, and you've got sort of an ownership over there and, you know, want it to be represented properly and, you know, kind of keep it, you know, in
the truth of who she is.
Yeah,
the writers are really good at that as well. They seem to take Johnny's idea and just go with it. And they are very good at letting us jump in and say if there's something that wants to change. So, yeah, we can keep it on the right road.
That's really good. So I've got a question here from at HughesJG on Twitter, and he says, what do you most look forward to doing work-wise now that you're getting better?
On the road to recovery. So absolutely no medical dramas.
No. Stay away from casualty.
I've ticked them all off. I've ticked casualty off and all of those ones, so I don't think I need to go back just yet. Just something really fun, maybe a comedy, comedy, or something totally different. Like one of my favourite films is The Fifth Element.
Oh, yes. Well done.
I'm obsessed. Mm. So something, you know, like that would be really fun. Yeah. Just totally different.
Kind of wacky, surreal. Almost, yes. Just totally OTT even, isn't it, I think?
Definitely. Maybe down those two routes. But nothing too true life, nothing too medical.
Yeah,
I'm sure I'll go back to that.
I mean, obviously, this is a podcast based on a sci-fi show because we love it and we do like our sort of fantasy and sci-fi stuff as well, do we not, Jeff? But you know, I love the real world stuff as well. I've got all my classics over there, and the rest of it is all the sci-fi stuff. But you know, I kind of think that if it wasn't for all this sci-fi stuff, you know, I think sometimes we just need that outlet in whatever way it manifests, and for some people it's different things. And you know, I do get kind of annoyed when a lot of people in certain industries sort of look down on this sort of stuff, you know. Well, it's not highbrow, it's you know, it's not Dickens and it's not Shakespeare.
I think
it doesn't have to be,
but it's still it means a lot to a lot of people. But you know, the writing, the acting, all of that is still
still at that level.
Yeah,
isn't it?
It's exceptional, and it does annoy me when, you know, genre stuff is overlooked and, you know, looked down upon. And you know,
do you feel that what genre do you think is looked down upon?
Kind of sci-fi and fantasy, I think,
superhero films.
That's and superhero one, stuff as well.
There's all that thing recently when you had was it Scorsese?
Yeah,
who was you know, having to go at all the MCU movies and saying, they're just trash, you know, they're mass market nonsense, blah blah blah.
And
you
know, I think, like,
but they mean something to people. People find inspiration through them. They connect with the heroes. And they shout at the villains. That's an important thing.
And film and, you know, music and, you know, all of it really is entertainment, and it's about being, you know, thrilled and scared and made happy and all of that stuff. And I think there's myriad ways that can be done with stuff. And like, I think it's been really great to see Angela Bassett be Oscar nominated for Black Panther, she's exceptional in the film. But it does sort of annoy me that other great performances in stuff like that is not overlooked. Seen as it's overlooked, you know. And I kind of think you get, you know, very serious dramatic stuff like you know, Brendan Fraser in The Whale, for example,
The
Revenant, you know, DiCaprio and The Revenant.
I do like The Piano, actually.
That's my go-to serious film. But, you know, there's nothing, you know, it's a different sort of slightly lighter, you know, acting that you get in, you know, fantasy and sci-fi and stuff like that. But I don't think it's any less than, you know, like The Piano or something like that. It's just different, do you know what I mean? But it's always looked down on. Like my bugbear is that
always set him off now.
Yeah,
get your cup of tea and Lisa. All right, sorry, Jeff. You
know, I've got a tea and a coffee.
Well, you're going to need them. But, you know, like no one in the in Avatar was nominated at any of the zoos, and I
there's no hope now.
just because it's digital, it's still acted by people, and I get, you know, I think it's wrong when
there's still a lot of love and craftsmanship that's gone into making that, isn't there?
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Digital or physical, there's still that skill and the teams of people involved.
And when films like that, or Top Gun, or, you know, anything in that kind of, you know, genre, sci-fi, fantasy type stuff, is ignored in, you know, makeup and costume and production design, because actually I think that kind of stuff is a much harder challenge in like production design work to create something completely, you know, from scratch that's not based on the real world. And so I get a bit annoyed when stuff that we like is, you know, like my wife said, Doctor Who's just a load of nonsense running around the spaceships, isn't it? And I was like, but that's just kind of like you said, Lisa, you've been watching Buffy, and they used to say, what's the drama or the problem for each character each week, and figure that out, and then what's the window dressing, what's the monster, how do we make it cooler, what does the monster represent, you know? And it was always based on, you know, the characters and what they were doing, and you know, I think, like, we've talked about this before, Paul, but there's a reason why films like Transformers, I mean, you know, it's very surface level and it's fun, you know, watching robots fight is great, but I don't care about any of the characters and stuff like that. I don't know them. There's no kind of connection to them. But that's why I think things like, you know, the Marvel films, like Paul said, you know, people can identify with it and connect with it. And, you know, there's more going on than just stuff blowing up. And I think it does it all a disservice when people like Scorsese say, they're just like theme park rides. I think it's film snobbery at its worst. Film snob should be, I like watching the IMAX. I can't accept anything smaller than that. That's my film snob.
See, this is it, because you are a bit of a snob. I am a film snob
for the screen size, yeah.
but bringing it back to, sorry, we triggered that conversation. Yeah. You mentioned The Fifth Element, because The Fifth Element is one of those films that is, on a surface level, complete and utter nonsense.
Yeah.
And yet, I love it. I love it a lot. Because of its uniqueness,
great visual,
craziness, its sci-fi-ness, its fantasy, and just, you know, Luc Besson is just an amazing director anyway, and just it's Bruce Willis in that as well, isn't it?
Which is
bizarre. The fact you've got Bruce Willis in there, but he's great in it, you know. And it's, anyway,
I've always been drawn to visual TV shows, you know, lights, colors, things like that. That seems to really draw me in. Also, things that you can watch again and you didn't see. Like The Fifth Element is a great example of, you watch it a second time and you see 20 things that you didn't see before. So I love that.
Yeah, that's all attention to detail.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, I saw this thing the other day. I think it was on Twitter, but someone had shared a little bit from Titanic, and there's a conversation between the captain and another guy who's saying, you know, you need to make the ship go faster so we can beat the record.
We need to watch out for those icebergs, mate.
Yeah. And this conversation was reported by a survivor from the accident lady. And in the background of this shot in the film with the captain and the guy talking, there's a woman drinking tea, and she briefly looks over as they're saying these lines. And that's obviously meant to be this woman who, you know, reported this conversation, and it's been kind of built into the film. That tiny little background action of this woman looking over at the right time, I was like, that's why Cameron's the best. But anyway, I digress. So
sometimes they're the best things in acting, you know. You might have the biggest monologue in the scene, but if someone comes in with like the best little reaction, you're going to remember that part of it.
But you're right, and it's like on songs, you know, like a song can be really good and then you just get like a little woohoo or something at the right point and it lifts it up. And I remember there was in Almost Famous, the Cameron Crowe film, they're talking about, you know, I can't remember what song it was, but, you know, it has a little thing in it, like a bit of vocal or something like that, and the guy says that's what takes it into greatness. You know, and like, I love those little bit, you know, like someone will go, hey, in a song. Or, do you know what I mean? It's just a little thing, that it just a bit of fun that kind of lifts something up a little bit, you know. So I always like listening out for stuff like that.
So here's a question, right? So I'm just going to throw this one in there. It's kind of to both of you, actually, because Jeff, you are a director. You work with actors. Lisa, you are an actor. You work with directors, mm-hmm. yep. right? So what do you prefer? Do you prefer the kind of, people to be, or your characters when they're being acted to be more naturalistic, more, you know, more recognizable human, or do you prefer this sort of the veering towards fantasy to go like a little bit OTT, to maybe dive into something a bit more melodramatic? What do you think?
I'll let you go first, Lisa.
I think it's all
it's not a trick question. It's
I would say it's just it's all to do with the context in which you're acting in. You know, it depends what show you're acting in. If you were to go into something like, I don't know, Happy Valley, that's what it's called, isn't it, Happy Valley, and be this very like dramatic character, you're gonna be like, that person's a terrible actor, it doesn't fit in with that.
It doesn't,
but if you was gonna be in, say, a dramatic show, like, I'm trying to think, maybe one of the Marvel films, where they're all, you know, very theatrical, if you was a very small character and the people say that doesn't fit in, so it depends what context.
I
do like the naturalistic roles, I feel like I sit better there, but you know, when I come out of hibernation, maybe I'll bring the drama.
Indeed, we all love a bit of drama.
I'd agree, you know, depending on what you're watching, there's different kind of styles to approach. I think a big thing for me is kind of, I like this doesn't sound quite right necessarily, but a sense of fun in things, and by which I mean, if you're watching a heavy drama, of course it's not going to be fun, but there needs to be a spark, I suppose that's a better phrase, a spark behind the performance and the people. So I watched something on Netflix last night, and I'd seen the trailer for it, and I thought, oh, that looks great, and I watched it was called Lockwood & Co, and I watched it, and I was like, God, this is not working for me, because they're ghost hunting, but it's really dry and it's quite dull in the performances. And there was lines in it, and I was like, why is that delivered so flatly and kind of deadpan? And I was like, this needs a bit of a spark to it for me. And I'll watch another one, and I'll see if it kind of clicks, you know. But that's kind of, do you know what I mean? I like personality, and I like a bit of oomph behind the performance, and it doesn't really matter what it's in, you know. And that's why I think people like, you know, Robert Downey Jr. are successful and popular, because there's so much life in the performances, you know.
Tony Stark is quite a melodramatic character. He's a dramatic character. He loves the drama, but it's built into the character, and he still keeps grounded. So actually, you're right. He's got that thing where he can do both of those in the same. In the same performance. Yeah. Sorry, we're going way off now, aren't we? We're talking about Marvel stuff.
I'm enjoying it.
Well, we should talk about you.
Indeed. Well, actually, let's go on to how you started acting, Lisa. You know,
there's a segue.
We can do that.
Before we go on, can I just double check my Hobbit feet are not in shot?
Go for it.
No, they're not in shot, are they?
They're not in shot. No. I thought you meant not in shock or something. I thought it was a thing you had to do.
I don't want to subject anyone to my feet. I've not got any socks on. How did I start acting? So I think I was about 16, and a friend of mine started attending like a local youth group
where they sung,
they danced, and they acted. And I was quite talented at dance, and I was quite talented at acting, but I used to mime in the back of singing, so it's not
brilliant.
That's not my strong point. I love to sing in the shower, but I don't think I'm going to get cast in any musical anytime soon.
Never know.
No, I hugely doubt it. Terrible. I can hold a tune, but just one note at a time.
Okay, that's technically that's not a tune, but you know.
Yeah. So maybe I can't even hold a tune. But I remember, oh my gosh, I got spotted. So we did a show, I think it was either Bugs and Alone or something like that. And there was someone in the audience that pulled me out to do an advert, which was the drugs advert.
Oh, yeah,
and then the Sony advert, and then from there I took a break, really. And the next time I decided to do some acting was when I was hitting early 20s, right? So I just left college and I had no credits behind me, to be honest, but I started writing out to all the agents and I got nothing back. So then I decided that I would be a casting agent.
Okay.
I'm waffling, right?
That's
but
right,
I go to them
it.
And I'm like, I said to them, if I can't be an actor, give me a chance as an agent. So I got an interview to be an agent, and the same day at the meeting, the guy pulled me out and said, I don't think you'd be an agent. I think you'd be an actor. So I ended up getting what I needed
by going
in the end, by going the other way around. and that started my kind of auditioning and road into acting.
Right.
But it was so funny. Like, I think that's why you just can't dwell on closed doors.
Yeah.
Because if it's right for you, it will come back to you. And I think that's like a working class attribute as well. Like growing up, you didn't really get anything given to you. So if you couldn't get through the front door, or try and sneak through the back door.
Try the windows, put a brick through them.
Kick the door in. No, joking.
I think you're right, though. You have to be driven, don't you? Yeah, you do. And really pursue any opportunity. And, you know, if you can't get, you know, those breaks, you know, can you make them yourself, you know, and let things go from there, you know, whether it's make your own film or, you know, whatever. So the way you kind of approach things, I think, was quite a good, you know, good way to do it. And it worked out for you and got you what you needed, because, you know, life has a funny way of working out like that sometimes, doesn't it? You know,
it was a very flip attitude of going about things. As I've got older and wiser, I'm not sure I would do things that way anymore. But, you know, I was very young at the time, nothing to lose.
Well, that's the thing.
I didn't know where I was going in life.
As you get older, you know, and you know, you've got a mortgage or kids or something like that, you know, it can be harder to kind of take those big chances, you know.
Go for it,
you know, because I know people, they'd love to be photographers or, you know, whatever it might be. But they can't quit the job and go into doing something that initially won't earn them any money, you know. And so you can still do it when you're older, of course. You know, you've got to be really ballsy, you know, to go for it like that, I think. But, you know, when you're a bit, you know,
never say never, Jeff.
Well, never say never. And I was going to say, when you're a bit younger, you can afford to take those risks a bit more. But when you get older, maybe you have to be a little bit more careful about it. I mean, like for me, you know, I worked at Sainsbury's at the petrol station and I kept getting filming work. And then, you know, it was my mum. She said, well, you know, maybe you need to try it for 6 months, to, you know, stick it to Sainsbury's and try it for 6 months. And if it doesn't work, then you can get another job somewhere. But you'll always regret it if you don't try it. So I told Sainsbury's, you know, I'm out of here. And I gave it 6 months and I thought, oh, you know, it's been okay. Try another 6 months. And then tried another 6 months. And after that year and a half, I was like, well, maybe I don't need to be keep trying every 6 months, you know. And I, you know, just built up slowly, you know, over time. And, you know, if I hadn't done it, I'd have always regretted it. So, you know.
Yeah, but the industry in general is a hard industry to be in. You know, there's not a lot of opportunities. You know, I've been very lucky with the work that I've got and the jobs that I've done. But I do think there needs to be more opportunity for older people. You know, there are some opportunities here and there, especially on the BBC website. They do come out with things that older people can go, you know, like writing camps and things like that. Yeah. But it does annoy me when I see things like, you know, you have to be 16 to 24. Why? You know, let's open it up a bit more. So hopefully change will come. I've seen a lot of change. More opportunities are coming through. But you're so right, it is, you know, scary to take risks, especially when you have mortgages and things like that. So it is a tricky situation to be in. I'd have to come back to you on how to kind of find a solution for that one. But that's everyone's problem, really, in terms
that's
of
what I was gonna say.
Like, you know, lot of people can't, if they've come from working class backgrounds, you might have to get a side job. You know, it's not all glamour TV and film work.
Sorry, I just muted my mic.
Is that you, Jeff?
Yeah, it's the answer phone at the office. I just muted the mic, but it was
so unprofessional.
It didn't work. Yeah, you know, I've known a number of actors who have, you know, side jobs and things to,
to
keep the income going, and you know, there's no shame in that at all. You know, but
there's no shame. I don't know why people don't talk about it more.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had side jobs my whole life, right? Because even when I was working in big TV shows. I'd always have that, obviously, this perfectionism and always thinking 17 steps ahead. Like, once that finished, what would happen next? Well,
yeah,
you know?
What's next?
So,
yeah.
I've always had side jobs that the trick is to get a side job you enjoy.
Yeah.
And that might be difficult, but, you know, if you're interested in photography or casting, I think an actor can open
if you can present as well, then that gives you more options, and if you could, you know, live host events, then there's that option. So do you know what I mean? So like, the more avenues you can go down related to the acting, I think the greater the chance you've got of working more, you know.
An agent said to me many years ago, that if you talk about doing other things, you're not seen as a professional actor. And I hated that.
Yeah, I'm
and
not
I remember
sure
that sat with me. No, I remember it sat with me. And I thought, I don't think that's right, you know, because like you said, as you go on in life, say if you've learned directing skills and casting skills and things like that, one door will eventually open.
Yeah.
It might not be the door that you originally thought you was going to go down, but it might lead you back to it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I've excuse me.
Got a cough.
No, right. Edit that. That's a bit of a frog in my throat going on there. You know, it just came there. I was going to say, in my day job, I've employed a quite a few free actors, like to do what, which may sound weird, mystery shopping, where they go into a shop, pretend to be a customer, evaluate certain things that being asked to look at, have a conversation, remember it, record it, whatever, and then write reports on it and stuff like that. And you think, well, that's pretty dope. I mean, it's not for everybody, right? But one of my recent guys, and I didn't know this, I didn't actually know he was an actor. He just said, I've done loads of mystery shopping before. And he was really, really good at it. And I got him to do quite a few more of them because he's so reliable. And I was having a chat with him, and he said, it's like you're being a different personality each time. That's where I get a bit of fun out of it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm going to, you know, I look at the brief, what I need to go through, and I'm going to be this person. And he embodies that person and, you know, does all the actually stuff. And he said it keeps the skills fresh. And it turns out he's been a Cyberman quite a few times, which I didn't realize until, you know, I saw his Twitter, and he's got a picture of himself as a Cyberman. I'm like, dude, is that you? He's like, yeah, I've been a Cyberman. He goes, well, you never told me you're in Doctor Who. He goes, well, I don't tell everybody. I said, you should have told me.
That's how he should leave.
Doctor Who, man. You didn't tell me you were a Cyberman, for crying out loud. Honestly, just a little story. I read it in there, you know. Yeah, there you go. But yes, it does, because I think also doing different things must help you as an actor.
Mm.
Like you said, extend your range, you know, give you the sort of knowledge you need to think, okay, when I'm acting that scene, it's a bit like when I did that mystery shop or whatever it is, you know, and I talked to that person there. It gives you more stuff that you can, that can fuel the actorly ability. Surely I would.
And I think it's important to know that you're more than just an actor.
Yes.
You know? I think sometimes you, like, who other in, like, their jobs get swept up? Like, so if you're an accountant, right, I don't know if that accountant would go home and be like, accountant. You probably switch off when you get home, right? But with acting, there seems to be this thing where it's part of your identity.
Absorbing the fuel.
So I think it's good just to remind yourself that you are more than, you know,
yeah.
you might be a fantastic mother, you might be an amazing chef, you know, it doesn't have to be things that you're good, like, not good at, because you are a good mother and a good chef, but you know, other jobs.
Yes.
Just be parts of your character. Just to remind yourself that you're more than just your job.
Yeah.
I like that. I think that's a great attitude. Yeah, I do like that a lot.
That leads quite nicely into this question. So tell us about the positive stories that you've been doing on TikTok.
Positive stories?
Yeah, is that what you've called them?
I started these positive stories. So I'm just gathering some extra knowledge. But I just found it interesting reading about people that were not very known and telling their story. That's basically what it's all about. You know, I did one about this lady who she ended up saving like thousands of Jewish children, right? Mm. And she got tortured and she never like told anyone what was going on and never gave any names and stuff like that. And she lived till she was 98 and wow. her story's amazing.
Wow.
So I thought I'd share kind of positive stories like that on TikTok yeah. and because I enjoy it. I enjoy yeah. reading up about history.
Well, I think we need, you know, more positive stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, there's enough yeah. of the other type of stuff out there. Mm. So quick, give a plug for your TikTok handle.
Oh my gosh, I don't even know the name. I just do it for fun.
He threw that one in there, Lisa, didn't he? Just no preparation on that. Just bang straight in there. Like, ninja question.
Oh my gosh. Like you can tell I'm just doing it for fun. Do you know what I mean? Not, I'll have to get back to you with the TikTok.
We can find it. Let us know.
Yeah, yeah. You shared stuff on your Twitter as well, haven't you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've got a question from John Cole on Facebook here. Is there any actor that you'd love to work with?
Ooh,
any actor. I mean, Jennifer
Saunders,
we talked
about the
course.
Doctors, didn't we?
Yeah.
So,
we've done
those. Can't choose them again.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jennifer Saunders. I think she's incredible. Helena Bonham Carter. I think she's
oh,
she's
wow.
great.
Yes.
Who else? I would love to work with Leonardo DiCaprio. Just because I know there's a lot in the press at the minute about him, but I do think he's an incredibly talented actor.
Yeah. He really is.
And I would just love to see how he works. Mm. You know, sometimes the stuff in his private life doesn't seem to be too positive, what goes out. But like I said, I think you could just learn a lot from him in terms of his acting. He's brilliant, even
yeah,
from
he
is. His
he's
early
good,
films.
Actually. Yeah.
So those three would be people that I'd love to work with.
Mm.
Yeah, well, any of those three.
Fingers crossed.
But I'm quite open. I'll work with anyone.
Yeah.
I'll
work with anyone.
brilliant. What's next for you then, Lisa? Obviously, you know, getting better, recovering, but you know, is that so? I guess for the foreseeable future, you know, the immediate future, that's
it's kind of. I think this has been a chapter of my life where I'm really focusing on me and how I look at things in life, and like you say, retraining my brain to kind of look at things differently. You know, I think maybe I'm a positive person, but I was always someone who thought I could do things better. And I'm enjoying the fact now that I don't have to do that. Do you know what I mean? It just makes life a lot freer.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've also been writing. I'll maybe submit something to the BBC or Channel 4. I've lost my headphone.
Oh, hold on.
Hold the phone.
Hold on.
I'm back.
You're back.
So
back
yeah,
in the room.
Doing a bit of writing. I'm enjoying making TikToks for fun.
Yeah.
Maybe you could write a
Big Finish.
Big Finish short story for Flip. You know, they have the short ones.
Do you know what? Not a bad idea. Not a bad idea. Maybe I could get John involved as well.
Yeah.
Co-write.
Yeah.
There
you
go. And
yeah,
my agent. There's no story, but you can come up with that.
this is why we don't write for Big Finish. Yeah. We come up with ideas, but actually no story.
Yeah.
Like that. A short version story sounds good.
Yeah.
And my agent has been, you know, sending me little things here and there, like, do you want to do it? And they do sound fun.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like retraining again with auditions and things like that to see if it's something I still enjoy, still want to do. But yeah,
oh, brilliant. Well, keep us, you know, keep us posted on everything.
Yeah, please do.
You know, we wish you the best of luck with all of it, and
definitely,
you know, can't wait to, you know, see you on screen again and hear Flip again soon as well. Hopefully,
thank you very much.
So, but before we go, is there anything that you'd like to say to Doctor Who fans and Flip fans?
Oh,
maybe we should come up with a name for Flip fans,
Flippers, Flip fans, fans
Flippers.
Of Flip,
Flippers.
Yeah.
Boom. Trademark.
Yeah, you can have that, but we'll take 50%.
That's two things.
Yeah.
Probably just thank you for just always being so kind. Like, I've always been met with such kindness and such warmth, you know, whether it's at conventions or online, you know, everyone's just always been so lovely. Especially over the last 2 years, like, I have really noticed the amount of people checking in and sending nice warm wishes and things like that. So yeah, just thank you for being lovely people.
Oh, that's really nice. Yeah,
it's fantastic. Brilliant stuff. Okay, well, Lisa, listen, thank you so much for joining us today, and it's been a real pleasure, real delight, and thank you for sharing your stories.
Yeah,
and, that's okay.
We'd love to see Flip again. We'd love to see you in whatever you do next. Yes. So, as Jeff said, please keep us keep us well informed. And thank you so much for your time this morning. It's been
thank you for joining us. I know this is the first thing you've done like this in a while. So.
This is. This is like the first thing that I've done in like 2 years.
Wow.
So we feel very lucky.
Very privileged. Yeah. Definitely. That's Lisa Greenwood, everybody. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Brilliant.
Thank you, guys.